All right, good morning. The May 23rd public meeting of the California Air Resources Board will come to order. Board Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Dr. Balmes? Mr. De La Torre?
Here.
Mr. Eisen Hutt? Senator Flores?
Flores here.
Assemblymember Garcia? Mr. Guerra?
Here.
Ms. Hurt?
Present.
Mr. Krakow? Dr. Pacheco Werner?
Here.
Mr. Perez? Mr. Rechtschaffen? Dr. Shaheen?
Present.
Here.
Thank you. Senator Stern? Ms. Takvorian?
Here.
Supervisor Vargas?
Vargas, present.
Chair Randolph?
Here.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
All right, thank you. Okay, as usual, I will begin with a few housekeeping items before we get started this morning. For safety reasons, please note the emergency exit to the rear of the room through the foyer. In the event of a fire alarm, we are required to evacuate this room immediately and go down the stairs to the lobby and out of the building. When the all clear signal is given, we will return to the auditorium and resume the hearing. We are conducting today's meeting in person, as well as offering remote options for public participation, both by phone and in Zoom. Anyone who wishes to testify in person should fill out a request to speak card available in the foyer outside the boardroom. Please turn it into a board assistant as soon as possible. If you are participating remotely, you will raise your hand in Zoom or dial *9 if calling in by phone. The clerk will provide further details regarding how public participation will work in just a moment. At the start of the meeting, the board will consider and vote on consent calendar agenda items as noted in the public agenda. We will hear public comment from anyone who has signed up to testify on staff's proposal as posted on the CARB's website. A closed captioning feature is available for those of you joining us in the Zoom environment. In order to turn on subtitles, please look for a button labeled CC at the bottom of the Zoom window, as shown in the example on the screen now. I would like to take this opportunity to remind everyone to speak clearly and from a quiet location, whether you are joining us in Zoom or calling in by phone. Interpretation services will be provided today in Spanish for both in-person and Zoom attendees. If you are joining us using Zoom, there is a button labeled Interpretation on the Zoom screen. Click on that interpretation button and select Spanish to hear the meeting in Spanish. If you are joining us here in person and would like to listen to the meeting in Spanish, please speak to a board assistant and they will provide you with further instructions. I want to remind all of our commenters to speak slowly and pause intermittently to allow the interpreters the opportunity to accurately interpret your comments.
Good morning, Madam Chair and board members. Servicios de interpretación se proporcionarán en español, tanto en persona como las personas que nos acompañan a través de Zoom. Si nos está acompañando a través de Zoom y está utilizando el computador, vaya a la parte inferior de su pantalla donde se encuentra el globo terráqueo. Aprieta el globo terráqueo y seleccione español. Si nos está acompañando en persona y desea escuchar esta sesión en español, favor de hablar con alguno de los asistentes de la sala para que le proporcionen mayores instrucciones y un dispositivo. Queremos recordar a todos los comentaristas que hablen lentamente y pausen de vez en cuando para permitir que los intérpretes puedan interpretar sus comentarios acertadamente. Thank you.
Thank you. I will now ask the board clerk to provide more details regarding public participation.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. Good morning, everyone. I will be providing additional information on how public participation will be organized for today's meeting. We will first be calling on any in-person commenters who have turned in a request to speak card, and then we will be calling on commenters who are joining us remotely. If you are joining us remotely and wish to make a verbal comment on one of today's board items or during the open comment period at the end of today's meeting, you must be using Zoom webinar or calling in by telephone. If you are currently watching the webcast on CalSpan, but you wish to comment remotely, please register for the Zoom webinar or call in. Information for both can be found on the public agenda for today's meeting. To make a verbal comment, we will be using the raise hand feature in Zoom. If you wish to speak on a board item, please virtually raise your hand. As soon as the item has begun, to let us know you wish to speak. To do this, if you are using a computer or tablet, there is a raise hand button. If you are calling in on the telephone, dial *9 to raise your hand. Even if you previously indicated which item you wish to speak on when you registered, you must raise your hand at the beginning of the item so that you can be added to the queue. And for anyone giving verbal comments today in Spanish and requiring an interpreter's assistance, please indicate so at the beginning of your testimony and our translator will assist you. During your comment, please pause after each sentence to allow for the interpreter to translate your comment into English. When the comment period starts, the order of commenters will be determined by who raises their hand first. We will call each commenter by name and will activate each commenter's audio when it is their turn to speak. For those calling in, we will identify you by the last three digits of your phone number. We will not show a list of remote commenters. However, we will be announcing the next three or so commenters in the queue, so you are ready to testify and know who is coming up next. Please note you will not appear by video during your testimony. I would also like to remind everyone to please state your name for the record before you speak. This is especially important for those calling in by phone to testify on an item. We will have a time limit for each commenter and will begin the comment period with a 2-minute time limit, although this could change at the chair's discretion during public During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen. For those calling in by phone, we will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left and when your time is up. If you require Spanish interpretation for your comment, your time will be doubled. If you wish to submit written comments today, please visit CARB's Send Us Your Comments page or look at the public agenda on our webpage for links to send these documents electronically. Written comments will be accepted on each item until the chair closes the record for that board item. If you experience any technical difficulties, please dial 805-772-2715 so an IT person can assist. Thank you. I'll turn the microphone back to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. The first item on the consent calendar, as noted on the public agenda, is item number 24-2-1, the proposed 2024 State Implementation Plan adoption and submittal of 5 California Air Resources Board regulations. If you are here with us in the room and wish to comment on this item, please fill out a request to speak card as soon as possible and submit it to a board assistant. If you are joining us remotely and wish to comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial *9 now. We will first call on in-person commenters, followed by any remote commenters when we get to the public comment portion of this item. Dr. Cliff, would you please summarize the item?
Thank you, Chair Randolph, and good morning. Before you today is staff's proposed action to revise the California State Implementation Plan, or SIP, to include 5 CARB regulations that were previously adopted or amended. These regulations fulfill or support other regulations that fulfill various SIP commitments and therefore need to be submitted to US EPA as revisions to the California SIP. During the rulemaking process, there are certain administrative and procedural requirements that must be met in order to submit a regulation into the state implementation plan. The previous board hearing notices adopting these 5 regulations did not include the necessary language specifically noticing the adoption and submittal of each regulation to US EPA as revisions to the California SIP. Further, the board resolutions adopting some of these regulatory actions did not include the necessary language for adopting and directing submittal of each to US EPA as a revision to the California SIP. Therefore, to satisfy federal procedural requirements, an additional 30-day public notice and action from CARB is now needed in order to submit these regulations to US EPA as a revision to the California SIP. This proposed action is exclusive to revision of the SIP. It does not impact the regulatory language or other aspects of the rulemakings already adopted by the board. This concludes my summary of the item. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Clerk, have any witnesses signed up to testify on item 24-2-1?
Yes, we currently have one commenter on Zoom. This is for, as a reminder, this is for item for the proposed 2024 state implementation plan submittal of 5 previously adopted California Air Resources Board regulations. We have Mark Jason. I have activated your mic. Please unmute and you may begin.
All right, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, my comments and my questions is this. I started my business 11 years ago, family-run business. Right now, it's me and my son. We've been successful up to this point, even though we've had to incur the major expenses of the EPA standards and CARB standards for emissions by changing our vehicles. And now we're being asked to go to fully electric, which there are no electric tow truck availabilities to meet in demands of towing and recovery that I am aware of. And that is according to Miller Industries. So I'm just kind of wondering, what are we supposed to do as a small company that's been in business now 11 years? And I am a U.S. Air Force veteran, 1973 to 76. Started this business with my retirement money so I could continue on to make it a family business for my son. And now every time I turn around, the regulations change, the insurance costs have gone up, and now, again, we're being imposed upon by further emission standards that is going to cause us to become close to what I would consider bankruptcy. And I'm not very pleased with how unfriendly the California Resources Board has been towards small business in California. I yield back.
Thank you. That concludes the commenters for this item.
Okay, thank you. I will now close the record on this agenda item. The board has before them resolution number 24-4. Do I have a motion and a second?
Motion.
Second.
Okay.
All right, clerk, will you please call the roll?
Dr. Bombs?
Yes.
Delatorre, Mr. Delatorre?
Yes.
Mr. Eisenhut?
Yes.
Senator Flores?
Yes.
Mr. Guerra?
Aye.
Ms. Hurt?
Aye.
Mr. Krakow? Dr. Pacheco Warner?
Yes.
Mr. Perez?
Yes.
Mr. Rexhoffen? Dr. Shaheen?
Yes.
Aye.
Ms. Takvorian? Ms. Takvorian?
Aye.
Supervisor Vargas?
Vargas, yes.
Chair Randolph?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, thank you very much. The next item on the consent calendar, as noted in the public agenda, is item number 24-2-3, public meeting to consider a proposed new member for the California Air Resources Board's Research Screening Committee. If you would like to comment on staff's proposal as posted on CARB's website, please raise your hand in Zoom or dial star 9 now. When we get to the public comment portion of this item, we will call on in-person commenters who have submitted a request to speak card, followed by those who have virtually raised their hand. The Research Screening Committee provides a robust scientific peer review for CARB's research projects. The committee currently has vacant positions that need to be filled. Dr. Cliff will provide a brief summary of the item and introduce Dr. Michael Schmeltz for the board to consider for appointment as a committee member. Dr. Cliff.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. The Research Screening Committee, or RSC, is a body of up to 11 members with diverse expertise who provide scientific peer review for CARB's research programs. Today, staff asked the board to consider the proposed new RSC member, Dr. Michael Schmeltz of California State University, East Bay. Dr. Schmeltz would fill a current vacancy and expand the expertise in the committee. Dr. Schmelz was selected through a public nomination and application process, which began with public outreach in April of 2023. Staff reviewed all submissions, and top candidates were interviewed in November. Dr. Schmelz has demonstrated experience in public health research and has met the criteria set forth in the selection process. If appointed, he will help the committee continue to uphold the scientific rigor of CARB-funded research that supports and informs the goals and priorities of the agency. Dr. Schmelz's experience complements the existing expertise on the RSC, particularly by deepening the RSC's ability to provide meaningful feedback on community engagement, climate change, and environmental justice in a public health context. Dr. Schmelz serves in a number of advisory roles, including the US EPA Board of Scientific Counselors and the Bay Area Air Quality Management District, and works with a wide range of stakeholders designing inclusive approaches to research that effectively translate and communicate scientific knowledge to address complex environmental health problems. Staff are in the final stages of the recruiting process to fill the remaining four positions on the RSC, which are for expertise in community-based research, agriculture, urban planning, and transportation services and vehicle technology. We will continue to reach out to board members for outreach on future recruitments. I will now invite Dr. Michael Schmelz up to the podium to introduce himself. Dr. Schmelz.
Hi, this is Michael Schmelz. I want to thank the board for considering my nomination to the Research Screening Committee. I've worked at the intersection of climate change, public health, and air pollution in New York, Washington, and now California. My official roles have changed over time, but I have focused my work on applied research, helping to determine what could be done now and in the future to reduce environmental burdens like air pollution and climate change on marginalized communities. Working a lot with community groups, my main motivation for being on the Research Screening Committee is to promote research that is co-developed by academic researchers and community partners with an emphasis on the needs of impacted communities, especially when developing solutions. Another motivation of mine is the improvement of indoor air environments. While focus has been on outdoor air quality and sources, a portion of my work now is around electrification equity and our ability to improve indoor air environments with our transition to renewable energy sources, both for the reduction of indoor air pollutants and improved thermal environments. Lastly, I would like to promote and persuade the CSUs to participate more in the annual CARB research project solicitations. Now, I have a great respect and admiration for my UC colleagues, and no doubt they do amazing work. I do think that diversifying research portfolios will help with increasing and improving partnerships with different communities, but also engage a greater diversity of students who could benefit greatly from this research experience, especially those that live and work in communities that are impacted by these projects. Given these aspects of my motivation for joining the Research Screening Committee, as well as my professional and academic background, I hope to be a strong voice for public health, environmental and climate justice, and community-based research going forward. Thank you again for your time and consideration.
Thank you so much, Dr. Schmelzer. I really appreciate your willingness to serve in this capacity. Board Clerk, have any witnesses signed up to testify on this item?
Madam Chair, there are no commenters for this item.
Okay, I will now close the record on this agenda item. The board has before them resolution number 24-6. Do I have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any comments on this motion before we vote? No? Okay.
I do have. Just a couple of comments and also a question maybe directed more to staff and this to the applicant. We often talk about expertise around climate change, and I'm just curious if you all could speak a little bit to maybe non-traditional expertise around climate change, and I'm thinking about our tribal leadership and whether we had any individuals such as those to apply, and if not, how can we spur that interest?
Thank you for the question. So, Elizabeth Shealy, I'm the Research Division Chief.
We have not had applications come in from tribal communities so far. We are looking for new ways, as we do value different perspectives on the research screening committee. As stated earlier, this is a key part of our research program to make sure that we have solid peer review going forward. We look forward to working with y'all as we do outreach in the future, and we are looking towards additional ways, such as the Tribal Advisory Committee, to bring in new applicants and new nominations in that area as well.
And there's been a lot of talk about marginalized communities and how to support them, and I'm wondering, and actually this could go towards the applicant, you spoke to supporting marginalized communities in your research, and I'm wondering if you could expand on that a little bit. Those folks that you have supported and what sorts of research?
Sure. A lot of the work that I do now is in support, meaning the work that I do is not driven by sort of an academic pursuit, but a pursuit by communities who that come to a research group or partners that I work with to work on projects that they are interested in, or they are goals that they are helping, hoping to achieve in this way. So, for example, approached by some cities in the Bay Area working on electrification projects for low-income homeowners, and thinking about best ways to do outreach, best ways to engage with these communities to sort of participate in the electrification process and not being sort of left behind, you know, thinking about when EVs first, electrical vehicles first came out. In other ways, working with my students at Cal State East Bay, but also currently going to be working on a project with the Oakland Unified School District because of their interest in indoor air quality, outdoor air quality, thermal environments in and outside their schools, of their concern, and just approaching it with a sort of scientific mind about how we could engage students in sort of increasing their knowledge, their awareness of data, and sort of helping bring that awareness to the community as well through students in that way. So those are just some examples where sort of working with these different types of communities.
Thank you. I hope we can continue to extend our listserv to more communities, especially those communities that have lived experiences in marginalized communities, to speak to those issues that this research screening committee are involved in. I appreciate the work that you've done with those communities. I also hope that we can continue to find applicants, or at least send out invitations to those folks and communities to see who they may know who can possibly apply. It gets better and better, but it would be good to reflect the communities that we serve in this research committee, especially around medicine and what we know about communities of color and those voices that are very important in that space. So thank you for applying, and we appreciate the work that you're doing for those communities. That's all. Thank you.
Dr. Shaheen.
Great. I also have a question for Dr. Schmeltz. So great to see you here. And I was curious, I'm a member of the faculty at one of the UCs, and I was curious how you envision engaging more CSU faculty members and students.
One of the ways I hope to envision this occurring is right now the CSU does a good job around sort of the idea of sustainability in research and has a big listserv, but I think there needs to be different ways of engagement of particular expertise, and in this case, something like air pollution or climate change, and really sort of reaching out. You know, the CSUs are there to teach our sort of younger generation and get them bachelor's degrees, but I think they benefit greatly from the research process, as I have seen, and it helps them tremendously in the future. So a bit on my part is I really want to do a bit more outreach, you know, maybe even starting with my own campus, but many other campuses that sort of work on these projects, that they too can participate in these research projects. So that's sort of ways that I'm thinking to engage more with the CSUs.
Well, thank you for your leadership and your willingness to serve on the committee. Thank you.
Okay, any other comments? Oh, Dr. Pacheco-Werner.
Just wanted to thank the staff. I think I've seen the outreach grow, and I'm thankful for that. And I also echo Board Member Hurt's comments in terms of the continuing to diversify the committee, and I look forward to helping in any way I can to do that. And I'm very grateful for Dr. Schmidt's work, and as I read through some of it, really shines upon the community-based type of work perspective that really is needed in that committee. So look forward to thanking you for your commitment to do this.
Board Member Tech-Vorian.
Thank you. Congratulations, Dr. Schmelt, and thank you for volunteering to serve on this committee. I think it's really important, and I just want to echo some of my colleagues' comments and make two comments. I guess you're in the position of being an applicant, and so now we can tell you all our dreams and aspirations for the research work. One is I really support your CSU comment. I was taught at San Diego State University for a while, and I think that many of the students are very reflective of the communities that are most marginalized, and appreciate your inclusion of them in your project. So I hope that will continue. And then the second thing is I really hope, and I think we are doing better with this, but hope that you can also support the inclusion of environmental justice communities and organizations as lead researchers and as true partners, because I think we all know that academic research has not always had the needs of the community in mind in the best way, and I think that's really changing. And I think CARB can continue our leadership role, and the community air protection program is a great example, and I think integration with that program would be helpful. And any thoughts you have about that, I would love to hear.
Thank you. I definitely agree with you on the second point. You know, in my experience, environmental justice, climate justice, groups, nonprofits do a lot. And, you know, having to write grants, sort of get those grants, administer those grants can be a great burden on them sometimes. A lot of what I had hoped to do in some of my projects is alleviate that burden and really have communities really focus on the work that they need to do. And I think that's some way to help facilitate that as well, is I think going in the right direction, because they're doing great work already. I think they just need the support to sort of reduce some of those administrative barriers for them to be able to do that work. So, yes, thank you.
All right, so we have a motion that has been seconded. Board Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Balms?
Yes.
Mr. Della Torre?
Yes.
Mr. Eisenhut?
Yes.
Senator Flores?
Yes.
Mr. Guerra?
Aye.
Ms. Hurt?
Aye.
Dr. Pacheco-Werner?
Yes.
Mr. Perez?
Aye.
Mr. Rechtschaffen?
Yes.
Dr. Shaheen?
Aye.
Senator Stern? Oh, excuse me. Ms. Tagwarian?
Aye.
Supervisor Vargas?
Vargas, yes.
Chair Randolph?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
Thank you. The last item on the open agenda is item number 24-2-2, proposed amendments to the Advanced Clean Trucks Regulation and the Zero Emission Powertrain Certification Test Procedure. If you are here with us in the room and wish to comment on this item, please fill out a request to speak card as soon as possible and submit it to a board assistant. If you are joining us remotely and wish to comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial star 9 now. We will first call on in-person commenters, followed by any remote commenters when we get to the public comment portion of this item. The Advanced Clean Trucks Regulation was adopted by the board in 2020 and approved by the Office of Administrative Law on March 15, 2021. The goal of this regulation is to minimize criteria and greenhouse gas emissions from medium and heavy-duty vehicles. The regulation is expected to increase the supply of zero-emission vehicles into applications that are well-suited for this use. As of today, we are already seeing growth in the medium and heavy-duty zero-emission market. Truck manufacturers are 2 years ahead of schedule in meeting their zero-emission sales requirements, and we expect to see a continued growth in sales. The zero-emission powertrain test procedure was adopted by CARB in 2019 and establishes an alternative certification procedures for heavy-duty battery electric and fuel cell vehicles and the zero-emission powertrains they use. Today, the board will hear proposed amendments to the Advanced Clean Trucks Regulation and the zero-emission powertrain certification test procedure. Dr. Cliff, would you please introduce the item?
Thank you, Chair Randolph. As you know, the Advanced Clean Trucks Regulation established requirements for medium and heavy-duty manufacturers to sell an increasing portion of their vehicles as zero emissions starting with the 2024 model year. In July of 2023, the California Air Resources Board and major truck manufacturers entered into the Clean Truck Partnership Agreement. The agreement advances the development of zero-emission vehicles for the trucking industry and provides increased flexibility for manufacturers to continue reducing criteria and greenhouse gas emissions needed to protect public health and to achieve the state's climate and emission reduction goals. Recent statewide sales reported to CARB for the 2023 model year shows that ZEVs are making up 1 in 6 medium and heavy-duty vehicle sales. Presenting these proposed amendments to you today fulfills commitments made by CARB in the Clean Truck Partnership. We agreed to initiate a rulemaking action in 2024 to achieve two primary objectives. The first is to clarify that compliance determination and sales reporting requirements are both defined when vehicles are produced and delivered for sale in California. The second is to lengthen the number of years a manufacturer has to make up a compliance deficit from one model year to 3 model years. Based on input from stakeholders and to streamline implementation, staff is proposing additional amendments to the definitions, rule requirements, and reporting and record-keeping requirements to address issues that have arisen through early implementation. The proposed amendments generally constitute non-substantial administrative changes that are not projected to increase emissions, would decrease manufacturers' compliance costs, would better ensure the interpretation of definitions, and align the requirements with the board's original intent. Manufacturers have also requested additional flexibility to certify complete Class 2B through 3 vehicles, such as heavy-duty pickup trucks, heavy pickup trucks, by using the same procedure used to certify incomplete Class 2B through 3 vehicles. Therefore, staff is proposing to expand the optional pathway for manufacturers to certify complete Class 2B and 3 zero-emission vehicles through the zero-emission powertrain certification test procedure. In summary, presenting these minor changes for your consideration today honors commitments made by CARB in the Clean Truck Partnership Agreement, streamlines implementation, and offers additional certification flexibility to manufacturers. And although not directly tied to the proposed amendments, you will be hearing comments from several stakeholders today regarding issues with procuring medium and heavy-duty vehicles that relate to our heavy-duty engine and truck regulations. This shortage of product that we're hearing about is inconsistent with the early ZEV sales we are seeing. Following public comment, I want to discuss with the board appropriate next steps. I will now ask Kat Talamantes from the Mobile Source Control Division to begin the staff presentation. Kat?
Thank you, Dr. Cliff. Today I'll be taking us through the proposed amendments to the Advanced Clean Trucks Regulation and the Zero Emission Powertrain Certification Test Procedure. The proposed amendments consist of generally minor administrative changes with minimal cost impact and no emissions impact. I'll begin with a review of some background information, followed by a summary of the proposed amendments, and finishing with a brief discussion of the next steps. The Advanced Clean Trucks Regulation was adopted in January of 2021 to accelerate commercial deployment of zero-emission vehicles, or ZEVs, and contribute towards meeting the state's air quality and climate mitigation targets. The regulation establishes requirements for medium and heavy-duty manufacturers to sell an increasing portion of their sales at zero emission, starting in the 2024 model year and ramping up through 2035. It provides credits for early sales, flexibility to make up a deficit within one model year, and the ability for manufacturers to bank and trade credits. Now to provide an update on the Advanced Clean Trucks Regulation. Based on information reported in 2021 and 2022, manufacturers are currently 2 years ahead of compliance with the regulation and have already produced enough ZEVs to meet the 2024 requirement. We also just compiled the latest preliminary data for the 2023 model year, and so far it is showing that ZEVs make up about 16% of the total new medium and heavy-duty vehicle sales in California, which is nearly double from 2022. Lastly, 10 other states have adopted ACT so far, cumulatively accounting for about 25% of medium and heavy-duty truck sales in the U.S. Moving on to another area we're proposing to amend in addition to Advanced Clean Trucks, the Zero Emission Powertrain Certification Test Procedure, or ZEP certification, was adopted in July of 2019, and Advanced Clean Trucks require ZEP certification starting with the 2024 model year to receive credit. It is an optional certification pathway for heavy-duty and incomplete medium-duty ZEVs that increases consumer protections, establishes new warranty requirements, and accelerates progress towards greater vehicle repairability. In July of 2023, CARB announced a clean truck partnership agreement with the nation's leading major truck manufacturers. The agreement advances the development of zero-emission vehicles for the trucking industry and provides flexibility for manufacturers to meet emissions requirements while reaching the state's climate and emission reduction goals. The agreement marks a commitment from manufacturers to meet California's vehicle standards, including standards that will require manufacturers to only produce and sell ZEV trucks starting with the 2036 model year. As part of the agreement, CARB agreed to initiate a rulemaking action in 2024 to include specific changes to Advanced Clean Trucks that are part of these amendments. Now for a summary of the proposed changes themselves. As part of the Clean Truck Partnership, staff is proposing to remove requirements for manufacturers to track when vehicles reach the ultimate purchaser, meaning they will no longer have to follow and document a vehicle's entire pathway through upfitters and dealerships to its actual owner-operator. Instead, they will incur credits or deficits when the vehicle is produced and delivered for sale in California, which essentially means delivered to the initial entity like a dealer, an upfitter, or in some cases, the ultimate purchaser. This change also harmonizes with a recent amendment made to the Omnibus Regulation. Also part of the Clean Truck Partnership, we are proposing to provide additional time to make up any deficits. We've also included some conditions to that time extension and eligibility criteria as well to ensure that manufacturers are making progress each year. The proposed amendments also encompass minor conforming changes that coincide with the changes that are in the Clean Truck Partnership. But we've also incorporated other small changes that improve alignment with Advanced Clean Cars and the 100% ZEV sales by 2036 requirement under Advanced Clean Fleets. The remaining changes update reporting and record-keeping requirements and streamline implementation. Lastly, we are proposing to provide an option for manufacturers of complete medium-duty ZEVs to now use the ZEP certification procedures. Currently, those procedures only apply to heavy-duty and incomplete medium-duty ZEVs. Moving on to the next steps, staff recommends that the board approve Resolution 24-5, which includes adopting the proposed amendments and directing the executive officer to submit the amendments to the US EPA for inclusion in the California State Implementation Plan. This concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you. We will now hear from the public who signed up to speak on this item, either by submitting a request to speak card or by their raised hand in Zoom. I will ask the board clerks to begin calling on the public commenters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have 10 commenters who have turned in a request to speak card and wish to speak at this time. We will be showing a list of the next several commenters on the screen so that you can be prepared to come to the podium. Public sign-up closure will be in 30 minutes, so 10:15 or 10:16. First commenter, Mark B., and I apologize in advance if I mispronounce anybody's name.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm here to address trucks in a certain category particularly. First of all, my name is Mark Batts. My company is Tow Industries out of Los Angeles. I'm here from Los Angeles to see you today. I've been in business for 40 years. We employ 100 people. We serve thousands. Our primary, what we supply are essential vehicles to essential services, and I'll elaborate on that. We supply tow trucks, in particular, small, 1 ton through 100 tons, to essential services on the road, and I'll name some of them. Roadside service providers, the auto club, for example. We supply freeway service patrol trucks. We supply the trucks to law enforcement providers. We supply trucks to CHP contractors. We supply the MTA itself and those that serve the MTA. So again, I point out, they are essential services. Through the COVID pandemic, we were identified as essential services, as an essential service, as were the people that we serve. I leave that as we are the supplier and servicer of essential vehicles to essential services. I move to my next point. With CARB's movement towards clean vehicles, we wholeheartedly embrace that movement, provided the technology is there to do so. This is, we have, through the last, I've been at the business 40 years, and we've certainly embraced, even as difficult as it has been to sometimes change out clean or dirtier fleets or older trucks to newer, cleaner fleets. But we've been part of that process. We have helped our end users, some of them private, some of them government agencies, to move from dirty or call it non-compliant vehicles
to now. Thank you. This concludes your time.
Sorry? Out of time?
Thank you. Sorry. This concludes. Next is Joshua Lovelace.
Good morning, folks. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. My name is Joshua Lovelace. I represent the towing equipment manufacturer, Miller Industries. I reside in Southern California. And I would like to bring to your attention that I have personally worked with four different zero-emission vehicle chassis manufacturers on the engineering side to see if any of our bodies would mount to their units. They, in fact, do not, unfortunately. I am very active in going forward with this. It's just we simply have no options at the current time, unfortunately. And what I'm asking for, what we are asking for as a whole, as an industry, is that we are given some time for the battery electric or the zero emission vehicles to bring forth that engineering that allows us to mount our units to their chassis so that we can comply with the incoming mandates. As Mark mentioned, our essential services, which I'm sure some of you in this room have utilized, been broken down on the side of the road, your family members. It's not fun sitting there in a car in 110 degrees waiting for a tow truck to come get you. And if we don't have some sort of a stopgap between now and the impending regulations, we're not going to have any tow trucks, plain and simple. We represent less than 1% of the total truck sales into the state of California, but we represent 100% of the vehicles that clear the roadways. And I'm sure you can agree, once the roadways are clogged up, we're done. Produce doesn't move, food doesn't move, fuel doesn't move. So I'm asking for some consideration in this matter and looking for a stopgap. And we're willing to come to the table and work with you. We just need to know how. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Brian Banks.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. I'm a second-generation tower out of San Mateo County. We operate a fleet of over 150 trucks. We employ over 200 people. The way this law is written today, it would slowly but surely put us out of business. Our business over the years has partnered with the likes of P90 when they were in existence, the San Mateo County Sheriff's Office, Life Choices. We've worked very hard to give people without college degrees good livings where they can make an honorable, fair living with their retirement benefits and the ability to put a roof over their head. While I am all for clean air, I ask you guys to please revisit this and work with us to find a solution, because as Josh has just said, we do not have a solution for what we're going to do in the near future. And you know, this is a business I'm very passionate about. I'm a second-generation tower. Most of these people have given me their lives and their careers, and I owe it to them to stand here today and ask all of you to please reconsider the way the law is written today and work with us to find a solution so that I can continue to employ the people that mean so much to me and my family and my community. Thank you for your time.
Greg Herner.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board. Greg Herner on behalf of Miller Industries, Inc. Miller makes the towing and rotator bodies that are shipped to California for assembly and sale by independent distributors. From the standard flatbed tows you may see, but to the large rotators that move Class 8 trucks and semi-trailers off the road, off of I-80 during ice and snowstorms. There is no question that towing and recovery vehicles reduce air emissions. UC Berkeley found during the low traffic years of COVID that the freeway service patrol saved over 16 million gallons of fuel and reduced vehicle traffic hours by 9.6 million hours. That's 1,100 years worth of vehicle time removed from the road. There are over a million incidents a year in California, 3,600 per day. Having an adequate supply of tow trucks is important to reducing emissions and the safety of first responders and the public. The longer it takes to clear a crash, the more likely there's another crash. There are also emission savings from the assembly of the newest low-emission CARB-compliant trucks occurring in California. This ensures those being deployed are those lowest emission, because otherwise we're importing used trucks from out of state that don't have to be CARB-compliant. Trucks that have higher emissions require more maintenance. But this won't help the Freeway Service Patrol. Freeway Service Patrol are mandated to use new trucks and are subject to fines and liquidated damages if they don't. Miller Industries, on behalf of the small businesses and employees, would request that we work together to find a solution. Grant the same consideration to privately owned and publicly owned tow trucks have. We have provided multiple options in our comment letter for the board's consideration and ask that the board direct staff to further consider the challenges in the towing and recovery industry and work with the industry to craft a solution and conduct a 15-day comment period if changes are made. Appreciate the time.
James Wheeler.
Good morning and thank you. My name is James Wheeler. I'm the president of Municipal Maintenance Equipment. We're here to speak about the amendments and talk about why we think they fall short, especially for vocational and essential emergency equipment. First of all, middle stage manufacturers, as Dr. Cliff mentioned briefly, or were mentioned in the presentation, not all of those reside in California. And so many vehicles are manufactured, bodies specifically outside of California. A company may order a truck to mount a body. That body may be mounted 9 months later. That truck may be delivered to California after that and take 90 days to register. If credits are issued at the time of registration, it disincentivizes body manufacturers from developing electric technology, and it slows down the supply of electric trucks, first of all. Second of all, manufacturers should have the opportunity to purchase 50 state emissions trucks and purchase the offset credits for ACT to continue to deliver and operate. Right now, they don't have that ability. So we could buy the clean emissions. They're willing to buy the credits to offset. We just don't have that method. So all truck sales are running through California truck dealers, and there's a limited supply through California truck dealers because they're not selling enough electrics yet. So ACT is limiting their ability to supply, and there is no national supply currently. Talked about the incentive right now. It's very minimal, okay? I also believe that ACT needs to align with ACF. So ACF-protected agencies and ACF-protected vehicles that are not available in ZEV configuration need to be consistent in supply. Currently, the regulation does not allow that. And finally, OEMs that agreed with the Clean Truck Partnership, the manufacturers, have a path to add credits to guarantee a supply of ICEs for essential emergency equipment. They're choosing not to in some cases, constricting supply, affecting the ability to deliver these vehicles. I would ask that there's accountability for those manufacturers. Thank you.
Beck Birch, excuse me, Frank Wheeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Board, and staff of CARB. We're an advocate of clean air. I started in the business 45 years ago providing environmental essential equipment used in government and contractor business. My boys are now running the business. It's a family business. We have 50 employees and 50 families that are surviving because of it. Right now, we have probably 100 vehicles that were on order before this law came into play. And we can't procure chassis for those vehicles. Earlier, you heard that the chassis manufacturers, they control the dispensation of those credits, and those credits aren't issued until the truck is delivered. Well, we're waiting 2-3 years for trucks to show up because of the lack of supply from COVID 2020 and parts availability. And now the availability of chassis are limited because of the mandates of conflict between ACT and ACF. What we would like is to see that the essential emergency vehicles that this whole business was founded upon 32 years ago, 12 years before that, I worked for another company that was in this business. We would seek to request that there's a waiver for essential vehicles, emergency vehicles that are provided to city, county, state governments, water agencies, sewer agencies. We went through the PERP regulations. There was a bridge. We could get that done. There is no bridge for vocational trucks of this size and shape. And to convert to electric operated vehicles, it takes time for the engineering and designs to meet up with the on-road designs that are there now. Thank you.
Tim Wheeler.
My name is Tim Wheeler. Thank you for allowing us time to speak. I'm also representing Municipal Maintenance Equipment. January 24 has seen a majority of our customer base faced with the challenge of replacing dirty engines in their aging fleets. Our customers are about 85% municipal and running almost exclusively emergency and essential. Our customers, through outreach, we found that they want to replace the units and are really on board, but are struggling in a major way. Despite best efforts and designs by CARB to facilitate partnerships with OE manufacturers, constraints brought on by the ACT and omnibus regulations are restricting the availability of compliant engines. Cummins, in particular, is not filling orders and is placing holds on intake due to a lack of supply. From the market segment we represent, the grossest polluters left in our customers' fleets are being forced to stay on the streets to pick up trash, clean sewers, and clean streets. Fleet and city managers are also being faced with incurring fines they have no mechanism to avoid. We're having that conversation on a weekly basis with high-level management, cities and municipalities. They're very fearful about fines they're going to incur but have no way to avoid them. As a group, if we can find a path to support compliance for emergency and essential vehicles, small businesses like ours are going to suffer, communities throughout the state are going to suffer, and the air quality will suffer. Lastly, I would propose that the data being reported today on the acceleration of adoption of ZEV does not accurately represent our market segment or the vocational market segment. Trucks, medium heavy-duty trucks that are being accepted and embraced simply are not apples-to-apples comparison with the trucks that we sell that support communities, municipalities. I think it's important to remember that. Thank you.
Beck Birch.
Hello, my name is Becky Birch. I'm also a manager of a small tow truck manufacturing company here locally in Sacramento. I have 13 employees that are under me, and we have followed all of the CARB regulations. We've embraced with the new trucks, and as previously stated, right now there is no truck that is available for us to mount our equipment on there. That lack of product will also then trickle down where we won't have anything to build or sell because people are not going to have the vehicles that's needed to be on the streets. I know everybody's seeing the traffic on Highway 50. There's no shoulders. Auto Club, FSP, State, City Police, they all need those tow trucks to clear accidents. Yesterday morning, I counted 27 accidents between the morning to 11 a.m. just here in Sacramento. If we don't have tow trucks to clear that, that's blocking traffic, that's more pollution sitting there on the freeways as the cars sit there waiting for that accident to be cleared, which then also causes a train wreck because more accidents happen because everybody's looking at that accident. So we understand, we support zero, we just don't have it yet. And so all we're asking is just a little more time to give us a way to keep our business along with our employees' families' income coming in until we can actually have a vehicle that we can actually use for the purpose of the towing. Thank you.
John Bonzi.
Good morning, board members. My name is John Borst. I'm a sales representative for Chevron West Coast Towing Equipment, Golden West Towing Equipment. I represent the small business owners, the startups. There is no way that these people can afford these newer trucks, zero emission trucks. These things are going to run over $250,000. When I first started selling these trucks, I've been in this business 34 years, I've been selling for the last 20 years. I was selling these things at $65,000. 2008, they came into the emissions with the exhaust filter systems and all that stuff on the truck. Then by 2010, they came out with urea systems. These trucks are putting out nitrogen and H2O basically out of the exhaust system. You can literally run them inside the building as we're building them and not even smell any diesel coming out of these things. So we had built the first electric truck through a company called Hummingbird. We took out the Cummins motor out of a brand new international truck. We put in an electric system on that truck. This thing is absurd with the amount of electric wiring through this thing. This truck sat outside of our shop while we were going to manufacture a bed to put on this thing, and it got filled with rainwater inside that system. It killed the electrical system in this truck. We had to send it back to the manufacturer. They had to rebuild the whole thing and reseal it. Just like your iPhones, they are not waterproof, they're water resistant. These customers that are in rural areas, they cannot operate this truck that only goes 100 miles to do a recovery that could possibly take a couple hours. The PTOs run $12,000 versus $2,000 today. They cannot operate these trucks. These small businesses that are family owned are going under. I've watched many of them fail. As I started them, I watched them fail just as fast. Thank you.
Christian Corby.
Good morning, Chair Randolph and board members. My name is Christian Corby, and I'm the Deputy Executive Director at the California Electric Transportation Coalition. CalETC supports the Advanced Clean Trucks Rule because it's a critical piece of California's strategy to transition our medium and heavy-duty trucks to zero emission. We'd like to thank the Air Resources Board and staff for their willingness to work with stakeholders on these changes. We support our OEM members, including Stellantis' comments regarding the certification of complete medium and heavy-duty ZEVs, including the need for lead time. We support the proposal to align the definition of credit and deficit generation based on the delivery for sale in California, which aligns with the light-duty standard. We also support the proposal to have a three-year makeup period, but at this early stage in the market, we recommend allowing NZEVs to cover up to 50% of the deficit, which would be consistent with the rule allowing NZEVs to generate up to 50% of annual compliance. Additionally, we recommend removing or lowering the requirement that OEMs make up 70% of their credit shortfall in 1 year. If an OEM has a shortfall, it's unlikely that that OEM will be able to make up that 70% of the deficit in 1 year. And instead, we recommend giving them the full 3 years to make up the shortfall. We greatly appreciate your consideration of our recommendations and commend you on this work to transition California's medium and heavy duty trucks to zero emission. Thank you.
Brandon Neal.
Good morning. Brandon Neal with Truck Body Sales, second generation manufacturer here in Sacramento, assembling tow trucks, also with a family affiliation to a towing company in Northern California. Collectively, we have over 35 employees working diligently to provide emergency roadside and law enforcement support, necessary services. Currently, I've gone to a couple different conventions, seminars, presentations, seeking solutions that fit our industry. So far, nothing from the manufacturer level or even, you know, a vocational level fits that need. In the towing industry, you don't know what you're going to be called out for, when you're going to be called out for it, how long you're going to be there, or what additional occurrences may happen. The technology is not in development in any conversation with the manufacturers that I've had to solve that problem currently. They are very focused on the areas they can do, the delivery services, the drayage services. Those are the areas they're seeing success, so that's what they're pushing for. Right now, my business in particular has a limited time frame on how much product we have, how much product we can produce, how do we continue to move forward investing in new stuff when even the manufacturers are telling us there's not a solution, we're not working on it yet. Our hope is that we can see adoptions to address this and get exemptions for the emergency vehicles that are necessary to keep our society running. Thank you.
That completes our in-person commenters. I will now turn it over to John Moore.
Thank you. We currently have 10 commenters signed up to speak through Zoom. I will be calling your name first: James Fahey, Robert Van Lingen, Jamie Wright, Mariella Ruacho, and James Walsh will be the first five. Please remember to speak slowly so our interpreters can accurately interpret your comments into English. James Fahey, I have activated your microphone. Please unmute and you may begin.
Good morning, Chair Randolph and board members. I'm James Fahey with Mercedes-Benz Research and Development North America. In February, Mercedes-Benz announced the North American launch of the all-new B Sprinter. With this launch of our first all-electric vehicle in the Class 2B segment, U.S. fleet customers can now help make their fleets more sustainable with an emissions-free battery electric van bearing the Mercedes-Benz star. Mercedes-Benz applauds CARB's effort to champion the ZEV market. As a part of today's ACT amendments, Mercedes-Benz appreciate CARB staff's efforts to streamline certification pathways for medium-duty vehicles. These changes allow for increased efficiency and regulatory compliance and provide important and useful regulatory clarity. Mercedes-Benz also supports the amendments to 1963.2H, which allows the flexibility for incomplete medium-duty vehicles to certify to ACC1 and earn credits under ACT, rather than having to meet alternative certification pathways found in the ZEPCERT requirements. However, Mercedes-Benz believes that the same flexibility to certify an incomplete medium-duty ZEV to ACC2 and earn credits under ACT should be established in this amendment process. This adjustment would prevent manufacturers from unnecessarily certifying to both requirements for applicable vehicles with the introduction of ACC2 in model year 2026. Removing duplicative requirements would streamline development efforts and prevent valuable electrification funds from being diverted from existing projects. An incomplete medium-duty ZEV certified to ACC2 would already have to meet range, durability, labeling, standardization, warranty, and other requirements, so there would be no emissions impact or impact to consumers of medium-duty ZEVs. This change to the amendment process would also help bolster the market for medium-duty electric vehicles in California by incentivizing manufacturers to bring them to market through ACT credits, ensuring the important ability to upfit and second-stage manufacture these vans for specific customer and business uses. It also helps support the Advanced Clean Fleets program. That concludes my remarks. Thank you again for staff's hard work in developing this rule and for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Our next commenter is Robert Van Lingen. I have activated your microphone. Please unmute and you may begin.
Good morning. My name is Robert Van Lingen. I'm from Inglewood, California. We own and operate a B&H Inglewood Tow, which, as many people know, this is a very marginalized community that we serve. I want to thank and fully support all the speakers today, including especially the lobbying effort of our industry world leader, Miller Industries. We believe that we need to have some sort of a road service industry exemption applied to our industry, as others have spoke on. We are asking for an appropriate carbon representative from CARB to represent our industry and explore and address the challenges we face. And as a point of reference, we want to point out that all the electric vehicle manufacturers, from cars to heavy trucks, from Tesla to Peterbilt, are using existing trucks, non-electric units, to provide service when they fail. In fact, if the technology existed, one would think that these electric vehicle manufacturers would be the first to utilize that technology. It simply does not exist yet. Until that time occurs, until that time comes, we are simply asking for the consideration to add the road service industry a special exemption till we catch up with the technology to service the motoring public. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next commenter is Jamie Wright. I've activated your microphone. Please unmute. You may begin. Jamie Wright, you're there?
Yes. My name is Jamie Wright. I'm with J&E Truck Service and Towing out of Stockton, California. We're a family-owned and operated business, and we have been in business for 30 years. We provide a valuable service to the Central Valley, and we're asking towing and recovery trucks to be recognized as an emergency vehicle. We are urging the board to adopt the Miller Industries Amendment to keep new, lower-emission trucks assembled and sold in California. Currently, there is no zero-emission chassis that can support the type of work that we do and the amount of hours that we work out on wrecks. So we are asking for your assistance to adopt this amendment to keep all of us small businesses in California up and running. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next commenter is Mariela Raucho. I've activated your microphone. Please unmute and you may begin.
Good morning, Chair and Board members. My name is Mariela Racho from the American Lung Association. We urge CARB to continue implementing ACF, and we support the transition to zero-emission trucks. California continues to have the worst air in the United States, and ACT will reduce our reliance on diesel fuels, which releases particle pollution, smog-forming emissions, harmful to human health. The Lung Association and health partners across the country appreciate staff for their ongoing efforts to ensure successful implementation and delivery of billions in health benefits and save thousands of lives under truck electrification. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next commenter is James Walsh. After James Walsh, we will hear from Sean Van Lingen, Kirk Blackburn, Guillermo Ortiz, Sam Wilson, and Terry Manis. James, I have activated your microphone. Please unmute and you may begin. James Walsh, I have activated your microphone. Can you hear us? Okay, we'll come back. Sean Van Lingen, I have activated your microphone. Please unmute, and you may begin.
Good morning. So my name's Sean Van Lingen. I'm a third-generation owner, family business, towing company here in the greater Los Angeles area. We currently serve over 30 different police departments here in the greater Los Angeles area. You know, currently there is, as many have said, there is no solution for our industry to have zero emission vehicles. It's not possible currently. Second thing I wanted to touch on is that there is a carve out and an exemption for government owned emergency vehicles, including government owned towing and recovery trucks. So I'm asking that you take consideration for our industry, for somebody who runs towing and recovery trucks, that we follow the same rules that you have already carved out for government-owned towing and recovery trucks. We should be no different. When there's an emergency on the side of the road, we are called to assist stranded motorists. We are called to assist police departments, fire departments, whatever the need may arise. So I'm asking that you look into this and you also include us in that. In that exemption. Lastly, I just want to say, like I said, like I started this conversation with, we've been in business for 76 years, and this regulation will simply put us out of business. A third generation family business has been run for 76 years, is few and far between in the state, and I would hate to see a regulation like this put a third generation family owned business out of business, but quite simply it will. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'll try again with James Walsh. I have activated your microphone. Please unmute, and you may begin.
Hi, my name is James Walsh, and I represent Golden West Towing Equipment in Fullerton, California, as well as West Coast Towing Equipment in Sacramento, California. Our primary business is the upfit and build of Class 6, 7, and 8 chassis body configuration for the towing and recovery industry. We have, since the implemented CARB, been on board with the transition to following what CARB's objectives were, which is to cycle out all of these heavy polluting vehicles. We have been a partner in that process, from hybrids to the gamut, from every organization, from Freeway Service Patrol, all of the aspects that are in place in order to help the air quality in the state of California. The problem we're faced with, as you've heard repeatedly, is we do not have a vocational platform in which to move forward with our product line. The ramifications for this is that the users that we now serve are going to continue to use the heavy polluting vehicles that you seek to have removed from the equation in order to reach your goals. So it's counterproductive in our industry, which is all scope of the entire state. It affects all of your marginal communities. That's who we hire. That's who we employ. That's who all of our customers employ. So its ramifications are statewide, and we are going to have the unintended consequence of causing more pollution by creating an environment where we can't give them an option to take the next step. And that concludes my commentary on this. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Our next commentary is Kirk Blackburn. I have activated your microphone. Please unmute and begin.
Good morning. Kirk Blackburn here on behalf of the California Tow Truck Association, which is known nationally as Emergency Road Service Coalition of America, or ERSCA. CTTA is the largest towing nonprofit association in the world, representing near 1,000 emergency roadside responders and towing companies within California and throughout the country. CTTA shares the concerns about the ACT regulation that were expressed by Miller Industries, which manufactures much of the towing and recovery equipment used by CTTA's members. As explained, the mandates contained in the ECT rule will drastically impact the availability of all tow trucks for sale in the state. As there are currently no known commercially available ZEV tow trucks for sale capable of performing the same work done by traditional tow trucks, and no clear indication that any manufacturers have plans to develop any such ZEV tow trucks anytime in the near future, the lack of availability for any tow trucks of any tow trucks creates a dire problem for the tow industry and the motoring public that we serve. Without a sufficient number of tow trucks on California's roads, accidents, breakdowns, and impounds will remain uncleared. The number of secondary accidents increase, the amount of emissions from idling vehicles increase, and lost productivity from increased traffic will hit the state's economy.
Kirk, to avoid this crisis, Kirk, you're speaking extremely fast. Can you slow down just slightly? We'll extend your time slightly too.
Thank you. I'll repeat that last statement. Without a sufficient number of tow trucks on California's roads, accidents, breakdowns, and impounds will remain uncleared. The number of secondary accidents will increase. The amount of emissions from idling vehicles increase. And lost productivity from increased traffic will hit the state's economy. To avoid this crisis, CTTA also encourages CARB to include in the ACT rule an exemption for tow equipment. Thank you for your attention to this critical issue directly impacting roadside responders and the motoring public that they serve.
Thank you. Our next commenter is Guillermo Ortiz. I've activated your microphone. Please unmute and you may begin.
Hello, good morning, Chair Randolph and CARB board members and staff. My name is Guillermo Ortiz and I represent the Natural Resources Defense Council. I'm their medium and heavy duty vehicles lead. I'm here today in support of the Advanced Clean Trucks Regulation, which sets achievable targets for the delivery of new zero emission medium and heavy duty vehicles that gradually increase each year. Alongside the Advanced Clean Fleets rule, the ACT will gradually transition the state's transportation system away from dirty diesel trucks and ultimately put an end to diesel death in environmental justice communities. In addition, the rule includes measures to help manufacturers comply with the new requirements, such as rewards for early action and flexibility mechanisms to count extra ZEV sales for one vehicle type towards meeting the standards for another. This allows manufacturers to meet the requirements even if one vehicle model is not progressing towards electrification as quickly as another. In addition, there are already over 450 existing zero-emission bus and heavy truck models that are commercially available in the U.S. today, covering almost every truck class, duty cycle, and use case. As technology advances, we'll see even more options, especially for long-haul and heavy-load applications. And there seems to be a conflation of the ACT amendments being discussed today with concerns around the ACF, to which I would say that CARB is efficiently processing fleet reports for ACF purchases and handling exemption and extension requests, ensuring everything is safe, transparent. The ACF also includes both generous extensions and exemptions for fleets that act in good faith but face challenges, whether it is due to a lack of appropriate model availability, delay in vehicle delivery, delays in infrastructure construction, and in cases where necessary electricity to support depot charging is not available, there is flexibility within the rule. So I would like to conclude is that I would like to hope to see the EPA expedite the approval of CARB's pending waiver request. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Our next commenter is Sam Wilson. After Sam Wilson, we will hear from Kemi Modares and Jessica Trigueros. Sam Wilson, I have activated your microphone. Please unmute and you may begin.
Good morning, Chair Randolph, board members and staff. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you all today. My name is Sam Wilson. I'm a senior vehicles analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists based here in Oakland, California. The ACT is a vital supply side foundation of the much needed accelerated transition towards a cleaner, healthier, and more equitable and economically sound freight system. Furthermore, ACT bolsters the feasibility of other critical air quality and climate regulations like ACT's demand side sibling, the Advanced Clean Fleets Rule, which Guillermo so eloquently described. We're pleased to see that CARB staff are proposing amendments to ACT that enhance its feasibility and flexibility without sacrificing the environmental and health benefits of the rule. To realize these vital benefits of the regulation, we need it to be successful in the real world. Along these lines, we request that staff and the board take a close look at the language proposed around secondary vehicle manufacturers. We believe that, as written, the language may present a loophole for bad actor secondary manufacturers, allowing them to essentially convert new zero-emission vehicles to alternative-fueled combustion models. While today's economics would likely prohibit this situation, we can't be certain of the future. However, I am certain that creating a potential compliance loophole is absolutely not the intention of the staff or the board, and I would request that clear language prohibiting such actions be included in the final regulatory language. I'd be happy to speak with staff or board members individually or together regarding my comments and the specific request. And again, thanks for the time today and your continued support of fact-based regulations that promote a healthy environment, sustainable and equitable communities, and a vibrant economy. Thanks again.
Thank you. Our next commenter is Kemi Modaris. As a reminder, our speaker comment period signup has closed as of 10:16. Just as a reminder. So I have activated your microphone. Kemi Modaris, please unmute and you may begin.
Good morning and thank you for your work to make a cleaner air. My name is Kemi Modaris, president of Southern California Tow Equipment. This is a family-owned business started 1998 with 24 employees. My background is civil engineering / transportation from University of Nebraska and moved to California in 1982. I owned a couple of towing companies from 82 to 94 and one of the first freeway service patrol contractors when it was a pilot program. We all know the importance of mobility and traffic congestion on the public and commerce. As a provider of towing equipment to freeway service patrol contractors for the next contracts to start in 2024, we are having problems providing any chassis for them to use in their contract as of today. As a business owner, I have inventory to build tow trucks for another maybe 5 months max. And after that, we are going to be laying off and maybe forced to close our doors for good. Towing vehicles are safety vehicles, and we don't want to lose this industry to other states with used low mileage tow trucks. If businesses move out of state, I estimate about $500 million loss in sales tax revenue to the state of California, and it would be very difficult to get it back. Please adopt the Miller Industry Amendment to keep new, lower emission trucks assembled and sold in California for now. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Our final commenter is Jessica Trigueros. I've activated your microphone. Please unmute and you may begin.
Good morning, and thank you for letting me speak. My name is Jessica Trigueros. I work for Tow Industries out of Los Angeles, California. We have been in business for over 40 years. We outfit tow trucks from light duty to heavy duty. We supply completed tow trucks for freeway service patrol, contracts, California Highway Patrol, auto clubs, and law enforcement, and also to the public. As you've heard today, there is no solution for electrical vehicles with our bodies. We are very limited to the vehicles that we have to build for this year. We urge the board to adopt the Miller Industries Amendment to help us keep our doors open. With no inventory coming in, we're going to have to close our doors down, lay off employees, and not be able to produce any more trucks. Thank you guys for letting me speak.
Thank you. That concludes the Zoom commenters who signed up to speak during the comment period. Madam Chair, back to you.
Okay, thank you very much. Before I turn the mic over to my colleagues, I heard a couple different issues around that sort of are conflating a couple different rules. And so I guess I just want to do a bit of a level set. And have staff kind of walk through some of the basic structure of the rules and how it's applicable to these types of vehicles and companies.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. Yeah, as you said, there are several rules at issue here. ACT, which amendments are being considered today, the Advanced Clean Fleets Regulation, and separately the Omnibus Regulation, which is a reg that we're already implementing. So I just wanted to thank all of the commenters, in particular the Wheeler family, with whom I've had many conversations, and the tow truck folks that have come in today to explain some of the challenges that they're facing. I just wanted to note a couple of things. One, we're talking about the Advanced Clean Trucks regulation today, not Advanced Clean Fleets. Advanced Clean Fleets actually regulates larger fleets, so those that are 50 or greater trucks or more than $50 million in revenue. And even then, the regulations don't impact the tow truck type of fleet until 2027. And then, of course, if there isn't availability, as you know, those regulations have provisions in them to accommodate that, so other flexibilities. So not dismissing any of the concerns that we've heard today, but I wanted to just indicate that, generally speaking, we're talking about very large fleets, and there's some delay in when those would impact the fleets. As well, some of the state and local governments that own these tow trucks are actually not impacted. You heard that from some of the commenters. So those that are owned by bridge districts, for example, would not be impacted by the regulations. They are exempt. The Advanced Clean Trucks regulation affects only manufacturers. So most of the stakeholders that you heard from today are actually not impacted directly by the Advanced Clean Trucks regulation, but indirectly, there are some supply challenges, and you heard in particular from the Wheelers about some of the challenges that they've faced in getting supply from manufacturers as a result of constraints that seem to be placed on them by the OEMs who have not taken advantage of some of the flexibilities. That, you know, is something that staff is continuing to evaluate. And I think with that, I'm going to turn it to Jack Kotowski to give maybe a little bit more detail about the regulations and these various things, because there are several things that you heard today. And so I think it would be helpful to clarify a few of those. So, Jack.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Cliff. So, Jack Kotowski, Chief of the Mobile Source Control Division. Yeah, let me start. As we were saying, there isn't a forcing of zero emission in this category. Many of the folks were talking about the challenges. There still is time for zero emission vehicles to come in this category. Long term, we absolutely expect them to come into this category. The Advanced Clean Truck Regulation, the regulation for which we are proposing some flexibility amendments today for the manufacturers, is based on sales percentages. And at this point, and those sales percentages provide flexibility, therefore, for the manufacturers to decide which vehicles are the best ones to bring forward now, which ones to hold back on. For this year, this is the first year of implementation of that regulation. For this year, the percentage requirement is only 5% or 9%. Of their vehicles, depending on the weight category. So they sell, you know, 95 to 91% combustion vehicles, and then they're required to sell the remainder as ZEVs or buy credits associated with that. We are hearing from the tow truck folks. We are certainly hearing from MME on supply challenges. The scale of those challenges at this point, I think, are important to try and put in perspective. For MME, we have heard that one of the manufacturers that they deal with primarily, Daimler, is limiting sales due to limiting the sales of their combustion vehicles primarily due to the fact that they don't have sufficient ZEV credits in ACT. So there is a situation, a real situation they're dealing with. That manufacturer has several choices. They could run a deficit and make it up. And in fact, part of the recommendations of the staff proposal today allow that extension from 1 year to 3 years as part of the Clean Truck Partnership we signed last year. Now, ideally, I would like to think, all right, if we're giving manufacturers more time to make up a deficit, they would feel more comfortable running that deficit, and therefore maybe they would open up more combustion sales for MME, and that would provide more opportunities there. Can't guarantee it that that would be an ideal situation. But they can also purchase credits. And from what I understand with the Daimler situation, it would take about 50 ZEV credits to make them whole. There are, from our latest information, there are over 10,000 ZEV credits available if they wanted to purchase those credits. So the availability of credits isn't an issue. These are manufacturer issues, choices. The tow trucks are a little more nuanced. They've submitted a proposal. You've heard about Miller. The Miller proposal is actually, I think, three different ideas on exempting tow trucks, analogous to what you might do for a fire or police department. Right now, we rely on the California Vehicle Code for identifying those vehicles, and that's what we put in our regulation. We'd have some challenges with using that criteria and extending it beyond the fire. We'd have some challenges with doing that and how the ramifications of that would extend to other regulations and the consequences of that. And as you know, we worked hard last year with a lot of state and local industries on what an emergency vehicle is, in the ACF regulation, what are emergency situations. You've got electrical, you've got water situation, sewer. Our internet is an emergency situation sometimes. So it's really hard to limit that classification and expand it, because many things are important services. And I'm not saying that the tow trucks aren't. They genuinely perform a very important service. But it's cleaner for us to rely on the California Vehicle Code as a definition for emergency vehicles. With regard to their situation, they've talked about exemptions from the Advanced Clean Truck Rule. I think it's more nuanced than that. I think they do have issues also with Omnibus, and we are still working with them. If it were entirely an Advanced Clean Truck issue and related to availability of credits for that, we think less than 200 credits would solve their problem again. Again, the Advanced Clean Truck is not a regulation in and of itself that's holding up the limiting of these vehicles. It's not, there are plenty of opportunities available. We're working with the manufacturers and trying to provide whatever flexibility we can to make sure there are opportunities for industries like MME and the tow truck upfitters to be able to take advantage of the flexibility that's already in the regulation.
Okay, so to be clear, so we have one issue with the, combustion chassis. So we'll talk about that as part of the conversation. I just want to drill down on one more thing, which is there was a lot of concern expressed that there are no zero emission tow truck options. So I just want to kind of, you talked about the 2027 being sort of the first compliance timeline, but could you just elaborate a little bit on that?
Right. There would be, at this point, within the Advanced Clean Fleet Rule, as Dr. Cliff mentioned, it is a requirement that would apply to fleets of 50 or more in the tow truck industry, or $50 million. And for the weight category that is tow trucks, the first compliance date is 10% of their fleet would need to be zero emission in 2027. And so that is the first time we have a specific requirement on the fleet in that weight category. But even with that, if in fact the unique characteristics of the tow truck industry, either the build out as they were talking about, and how the various equipment hangs on the chassis, or the duty cycle, if either one creates issues, they can apply for exemptions, and they would be entitled to those exemptions so they could continue to buy a combustion vehicle.
Okay, thank you. All right, board members, Dr. Pacheco-Werner.
Thank you, Chair. I want to start by thanking everyone that came and gave public comment today, and all those who reached out to us about the current challenges our businesses face. I want to thank staff and our industry partners for getting to the place where we are today. We've come a long way together, and I'm excited about the future of trucking as California leads the way in providing the cleanest truck options worldwide. I am, however, concerned about what we have heard from stakeholders about OEMs leaving people with little to no options because they are not taking advantage of the current flexibilities, such as buying credits to make combustion vehicles that are needed for these essential services in our state. That part is not feeling like a partnership to make the transition a success. I would request, Chair, that we take some time before approving these flexibilities to ensure we are truly paving a path for a successful transition together. While the partnership is between CARB and industry, CARB represents the people, and we need to ensure their best interests in this transition and in this partnership. Thank you again, staff, for your work, and thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you. Board Member Guerra.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Appreciate this. First, I just want to thank staff for the amount of time they've taken on this issue and also getting to where we are right now on these particular amendments. And I appreciate, you know, Chair, for also level setting here and making sure that we're not conflating multiple issues, because we do have an obligation for this particular hearing on this particular item on ACT. And all that to say is that where we're moving is necessary. And in our Sacramento region here, I appreciate the American Lung Association's presentation today, the recent report showed that in our air basin, we're still at an F. We still have significant both particulate and ozone issues. And I want to thank also the presenters here from the towing industry who came here, I think, very earnest in their willingness to achieve the goals we're trying to achieve. And they're just asking for a method to get there, a way to get there. And I want to thank them for that point. And the beginning our conversation, embracing that this is where the direction we're going. But I do have these concerns, and any of us who sit on this board, who sit on air districts, also sit as board members to our sewer districts. We also sit as board members to our flood control districts. And again, I don't want to conflate these issues, but this is more of a maybe direction to staff and figuring out what our path forward could be, because many times it's these different rules and the ambiguity of laws and regulations and different silos of government at different levels that cause someone, say, who is working in an assembly facility, who is impacted by the shake in the industry, and that person loses their job while we try to figure out exactly what needs to happen to occur to achieve our not only economic goals, but more importantly, our public health goals. One of the areas that, you know, I happen to also chair our Sacramento Transportation Authority, which is also our Sacramento Abatement Vehicle Service Authority. And so for us, you know, we don't, this authority, which is all of our cities and our county,
Board of Supervisors and our council members, this authority doesn't own tow truck vehicles. They work with the local industry and individual business operators to basically address and ensure that, one, we have good throughput, that we have safety on our roadways, and when the unfortunate situation of an accident does occur, that they respond quickly and support our first responders in that effort. So, you know, Madam Chair, I think you're here where, I guess, where I'm concerned. One, I'm supportive of moving where we are on ECT forward. I do think accountability to the OEMs who are not participating is an important thing to consider today. But I'd like to see, or maybe a response from staff about, you know, two aspects. There's one, there's a towing industry aspect on how we can look at finding a way to consider their issue, or specifically focusing on this issue, because it is a particular niche group here. And then from a municipal standpoint, you know, whether it's our sewer districts or our water districts or flood control districts, many times these heavy-duty vehicles have specialized equipment on them, and we know that that's not the larger market, but it is essential equipment that we need for municipalities. I think that has another issue that needs to be resolved as well, and that may be in the omnibus regulations. But I would like to hear, a discussion from staff, or at least a response on those aspects. One, how do we put accountability on OEMs? But also, how do we respond to the challenges here? And I do want to thank, you know, the Wheeler family also, and Dr. Cliff for spending so much time on this. I know. Like any small business that I've talked to, when they're spending their time, you know, working with local governments, that's time they're not spending on their business. So, and that's not their primary business. Lobbying is not their primary business. They're just trying to figure out how to comply with the regulation. So let me stop there, Madam Chair, and ask, see if staff can respond to a path forward, even if looking at giving the executive officer some level of authority on a very focused point of view.
Okay, I'm gonna do two quick things first. I forgot to close the record on this item, so I need to do that. And then I think maybe what I'll do is maybe hear from the rest of the board members, because I feel like some of these issues are gonna be similar. So staff, make a note of Board Member Gatto's questions, and then we'll kind of go through them all at the end. Okay. I will close the record on this agenda item. If it is determined that additional conforming modifications are appropriate, the record will be reopened and a 15-day notice of public availability will be issued. If the record is reopened for a 15-day comment period, the public may submit written comments on the proposed changes, which will be considered and responded to in the final statement of reasons for the regulation. Written or oral comments received after this hearing date but before a 15-day notice is issued, will not be accepted as part of the official record on this agenda item. The executive officer may present the regulation to the board for further consideration if warranted, and if not, the executive officer shall take final action to adopt the regulation after addressing all appropriate conforming modifications. Okay, with that out of the way, I will turn it over to any other board members who would like to speak. Dr. Shaheen.
Thanks so much, Chair. So I'd like to also start by thanking staff for all their hard work on the proposed amendment and all your time briefing me on this item. I'd also like to thank all of the stakeholders who provided written comments and provided also verbal comments. I really appreciate and understand the importance of the towing industry to mobility. Towing vehicles, as one of our commenters said, are safety vehicles, and they are critical to mobility. But clean air is also critical to our state. So getting to a place of common ground, I think, is very critical here. I wanted to share that I'm a recent board member, and one of the very first actions I got to participate in was a toast at Asilomar to the Clean Truck Partnership. And it was a really proud day for me as a new board member to see CARB coming together with 11 partners from the private sector. So great pride
But you can imagine that when I was briefed on this item, that I was a bit disappointed. And that is something many of my colleagues have shared, is disappointment with this partnership and a desire to move forward. But as a researcher and a data analyst, I want to ask the staff just a few questions about credit. So, Jack, I really appreciate the background on there being 10,000 credits available, as well as a great deal of flexibility. We heard about that from NRDC as well. So creating a lot of drama and stress here is something that I really want to get to the bottom of. How many credits have been purchased by manufacturers to date, and how many manufacturers have purchased those credits? Could someone please address those questions?
Hi, Paul Arneja. So at this point, there's been one credit transaction of 200 credits. So one seller, one transfer. Oh, and there have been some additional transfers from manufacturers producing medium-duty vehicles to move credits towards the light-duty program out of the advanced clean trucks program.
And so just a quick follow-up, just an operational follow-up question is, so if credits have been purchased, so these 200 credits, how does this impact the truck towing companies if ZEVs are not actually available for purchase? How does that operationally work? What would 200 credits buy in terms of alleviating the pressures that they're currently feeling?
So in that case, it would depend a little bit on the weight class of vehicles broadly. With the number of credits produced, that it will give the manufacturers more options on selling combustion-powered vehicles. So as Jack mentioned earlier, the requirements are between 5 and 9% for different vehicles, which means if they are getting credits for 200 credits, which we can just say for now is 200 vehicles, 200 ZEVs, that could allow for up to 2,000 combustion-powered vehicles. So it just helps them out in the ratio and making sure that they can sell more combustion-powered vehicles by getting the credits for the equivalent ZEVs.
Thank you for that follow-up. I have just one additional question for staff. So one of the comments that was in the docket was from the American Auto Policy Council, and they were inquiring about staff's plans to confirm acceptable manufacturer test procedures and documentation for determining all electric range used in the near zero emission vehicle credit calculation. Could someone please address that question?
Yeah, sure. So as part of the Advanced Clean Trucks program, manufacturers can sell zero-emission vehicles or near-zero-emission vehicles, which would be a plug-in hybrid that meets a minimum all-electric range requirement. So the manufacturer would earn these NZEV credits based on the electric range of the vehicle. So we've been working with manufacturers over the past months. This is the first time we're seeing these vehicles being produced and just trying to look into the test procedures to see how they should be properly testing these vehicles and measuring the range. So that's an ongoing conversation, and it has been productive, but we're just trying to figure out the best way and if any modification needed, how to go about those.
Thank you for the follow-up, Paul, and I'm looking forward to our upcoming conversation about partnerships.
Board Member Hurt. Thank you, Chair. I also want to thank those who have made comments and reached out to discuss how this impacts their work and just future zero emission transformation that we're under right now. And also thanks to those from my home county of San Mateo for coming out here. I think it's really important that we do celebrate that there are other states that have adopted this rule and that we are 2 years ahead of what was a goal and a plan. These are all important great outcomes and work that's been done in this space. I also think it's great that we have this truck partnership for our shared future together, but how do we ensure 100% compliance and continue to grow a quote-unquote partnership is really important for me to understand.
And when I look at where we are today, I hope that that we don't use a broad brush approach, that we really, as someone said earlier, are more nuanced about how we capture those who are impacted and help them in this transformation. There have been a number of folks who have talked about the very specific industry of towing, and I see them as emergency vehicles, essential vehicles, although they may be outside of the code that you're using to make these decisions. I also think about marginalized communities who often use these towing trucks and what this impact has to them. And from all that I heard, because there are questions around availability, supply, control, it seems like a vote on this is just not right. It's not ready. And that we need to work more with sectors and industries like the towing industry to make sure that they are a part of the transformation that we are trying to move forward in. And I do appreciate folks, you know, declaring their support for clean air, but I will also say that inaction is not a possibility. So I hope staff works with this industry as well as others to see what are reasonable ways to move forward. So again, we're all moving forward together. I had questions around credits, so I appreciate Dr. Shaheen's comments, and I'll like to learn more about that. I'm sure others do too, about how flexible or non-flexible the crediting piece is around availability and supply and how they're being used in this partnership, and if not, why. Just some of the real world issues that surround accrediting, I hope you can just inform the public and us more about. And I try to get to the essential piece of this really quickly, but can someone speak to, like, what's the cog in the process right now of us moving forward? It's around availability and supply. Are we really talking about what manufacturers are willing to do and not do, and what are those criteria or pieces that are helping them make that decision, and how can we lean in that increase in supply and availability? I think the fact that other states have adopted this speaks to them moving closer to increasing supply, but until more and more do, what can we do as California to, whether it's a carrot or a stick, create options for people. So again, I don't think this is ready for a vote. I do want to thank staff for all the work that they've done on this. I think we do need to be more nuanced about how this impacts particular industries that are essential, that support marginalized communities, and can also be labeled as emergency vehicles in some form or fashion. Thank you.
Okay, I am going to, before I have staff answer that question, I'm going to call on Supervisor Perez, who is has been waiting to comment as well.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, colleagues, for quite a bit of great points that have been made by all of you, and I echo quite a bit of those sentiments from each and every one of you. And I obviously want to thank staff for getting us this far, and obviously all the hours you put into this, because this is not easy. By far, it's not easy. But I also want to make sure I also thank the folks from the industry, the tow truck industry specifically, for making the trip, and those that called in, but for those that made the trip to Sacramento, you know, that takes a lot of time, effort, money, resources, and obviously this impacts you in so many different ways. That's the reason why you're there, but nonetheless, you are there, and you're engaging the democratic process by voicing your concerns, and I can definitely appreciate that. I think for me right now, just to get to the point, is that I don't think this is ready. I'm not ready to support this, not yet. Although a lot of good work has been done, there's a lot of questions still that have not been answered, I think. And, you know, I do wonder about the outreach and how long was that outreach? Did we ensure that industry sat down, including the tow truck industry, sat down with staff to think these things through. How many sit downs did we have with folks? I think that's important. I also want to say that, you know, a lot of people were talking about the technology doesn't exist, or for that matter, the infrastructure, meaning the actual roads that we use are not ready, and who knows when they will be ready. And I get that. It's like we have to work on that simultaneously. I understand that. Now, one thing I want to make clear is that I didn't hear from any of the folks that brought up concerns that they were not in support of clean air. And none of them said that, you know, they don't want clean air for their families, for their communities, for California. They all said they want to get there. But what stood out for me was that they asked for more time. And I do wonder how much time is that? You know, how much more time can we, do we need in order for staff, for industry, for the folks in our communities to have this discussion, to answer every single question that came up? I live in a rural area, for example, and someone from rural California spoke up. And there are points in my area in which, yes, it will take about 50 miles, maybe 75, to get somewhere before you can actually gas up, let alone charge up. I'm also a person of color. And I know that I have colleagues that are up there on the dais and folks that spoke up that are folks of color. And ultimately, at the end of the day, how do we ensure that they are not left behind? How do we ensure that the working class, the working poor, people of color or not, have an opportunity to walk beside us? Now, I'm not sure we're going to get to 100%. I get that. I don't know what 80% means or 90%. I think we're trying to get to 100%, but meaning satisfaction. It's very difficult to get 100% satisfaction when we talk about policy, especially something like this is very controversial. But I do have those concerns around the small moms and pop shops, the small business owner. I think it's important that we think through that and not impose, although work's been done, and maybe impose is too much of a word, but impose amendments that potentially don't make sense for some of these folks. The issue of incentives came up. I can appreciate that point as well. Costs, even if these trucks did exist, we're talking about what, $200,000, $250,000 each? I think folks talked about rather than 1 year, a 3 year to make up for the shortfall of inventory. I think I heard someone say about the chassis and the need for that to be developed, manufactured. So, you know, there's just a lot of different points that were made, and who knows if some of these are right or some of these are wrong, or who knows if they're inflated. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But I think ultimately at the end of the day, I like to see a list of all these questions and all these questions addressed. And I want to make sure ultimately that we have folks from our communities engaged, and we come back and circle back around and vote on this in the future. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence, and my colleagues and those there in public.
Thank you very much. Board Member De La Torre.
Thank you. I know these two issues are conflated, ACT and ACF. I want to be really clear that today we're talking about ACT, which is on the manufacturers. And because this is on the manufacturers, I want to highlight a couple of things. One, I've heard that the prices of these zero emission trucks in the EU are lower than the prices we're paying in California. And that, if true, is very problematic. We are putting a lot of money through our incentive programs into these trucks. And clearly, we're not seeing the benefit of reduced battery prices that we're seeing in the passenger vehicle market that are the same battery packs. So if we're seeing improvements on the passenger side, that should be carrying over, and I know they're different companies, except for some corporate shenanigans. They are not passing through those lower battery costs onto the zero-emission trucks, and that is troubling to me. And I think one thing we could do, you know, it's a free market, and everybody's always talking about the benefits of the free market. I think we should post our HVIP purchase orders on our website so that people can see what the prices are. And so the firm, Trucking Firm 1, can see what Trucking Firm 2 got in their pricing. Let's have some transparency in this. Clearly, what we are doing to this point is not pushing the prices down. And we have a direct interest in bringing those prices down because of this regulation, ACT. And then its partner, ACF, which I'm not going to talk about because that's not what we're talking about today. But I think some transparency is long overdue. We're not seeing that kind of movement that we want to see. And so I don't know about the staff's ability to do that, to work with our partners in HVIP to make that happen. But I think that's a step that is long overdue. To something has to give. And I think the transparency between the difference, if it exists, between EU prices and California prices, and posting these purchase orders to see what the pricing is on the trucks. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Board Member Templin.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. just quickly, I want to agree with many of the comments that have been made by my colleagues, and in general, I think I would agree that we're not there yet, that we're not ready. And I just want to raise an issue that actually hasn't come forward, because we are talking about ACT and we're not really drilling down in terms of impacts on communities. And I really appreciate staff's work and also the tow truck industry's involvement prior to this hearing and here today. When I do a quick Google search of where tow truck companies are, and I just know this because that's where I live, they're in the most impacted communities. And that's not an allegation, it's just true that that's where tow truck companies are. They do their maintenance there, they go and come from those facilities, increasing diesel pollution where it's already the worst. And they employ many folks from disadvantaged communities. So we need to solve this problem, is what I would really heartily say. And if delay is the way we need to get there, then I'd fully support that. We have a lot of public health impacts as a result of diesel pollution. I really don't support delaying the transition of tow trucks to electric, to zero emission. And I think we do have the technology, and I'm concerned about the comments that have come forward that say that technology doesn't exist at all. The troubling part is it does exist, and it's not being made available. And so that's what I think that's the knot we have to untie. And so I'll just stop there and say I hope that we can do the work that we need to do to stay on the ACT timeline and really do justice to the issues that have been raised today. Thank you. Thank you, Board Member Tekvarian. I really appreciate that basic point that we need to keep moving forward, with both ACT and ACF as we continue to kind of work through these problems. Okay, I have one specific question, and then I kind of want to sort of frame up what we need to hear from staff on, and it relates to CalETC's comments. I was curious because there was, Christian mentioned something about the near zero and increasing the 70% makeup. And so I hadn't really thought about that issue. And so I was just wondering if staff had any specific response to that question.
I think it'd help if you repeated it. I didn't quite catch the cap issue.
Well, I didn't fully understand it either, which is why I was asking you.
We're all sort of looking at each other here, so.
But yeah, but as I understood it, maybe we should just ask Christian. We don't usually call commenters back up, but I just didn't quite fully understand it. But As I thought, as my notes indicate, it seemed like there was a difference between the makeup percentage for near ZEV versus ZEV. But Christian, maybe you could
yeah, sure. That. Sure. So it's my understanding, and this is a little complicated, but I'm trying to follow some of the comments that our OEM members made. But so there's two parts. The first part is that within the 3-year makeup period, we were recommending that NZEVs are allowed to cover up to 50% of the deficit, which is would be equivalent to what the rule allows, which is allows them to sell up to 50% of NZEVs to have compliance. But I think right now it's allowing them to use either 20 or 30% NZEVs instead of 50%.
Okay.
And then for the for the makeup period, the rule uses 30%. It's sort of like it's worded a little oddly, I have to admit. It's like a 30% deficit. They have to make up at least 30% of a previous deficit, which would essentially force them to make up 70% of their credit shortfall in the first year.
Okay.
So it sort of front loads the needs to make up that deficit in the first year. My understanding is the way that would work is it would force them to make up 70% in that first year. And what we're suggesting is that just allow them to make up that deficit over all 3 years instead of front loading making up that deficit.
Okay, thank you. So it sounds like you... this might be something if it sounds like there's some consensus that maybe we don't want to take action today, but maybe you guys could take a look at that sort of let the board know kind of what the response to that is. But circling back to kind of the bigger issues here, I guess I just want to be clear what we are and are not solving for in this discussion, right? The main challenge that, what this board action is amending ACT to make, to make modifications to provide additional flexibilities for the manufacturers to comply. However, we have a robust crediting program in ACT that allows manufacturers to sort of plan out how they are going to both meet their combustion engine requirements in ACT and Omnibus, but also meet their requirements in ACT to bring increasing numbers of zero emission vehicles to the market. And the situation we have now is that we are hearing from these upfitters and tow truck companies that these chassis are not being made available, and the manufacturers are not taking advantage of the flexibilities that we have provided them in ACT that were very carefully constructed. So I think we need to understand, is that true? Is that really the state of play? Because that's what it seems like. If it is the state of play, that's very concerning. To Board Member Guerra's point and to Board Member Hurt's point, you know, I think it might be useful to perhaps kick this to the next meeting and have the board think about, I mean, have staff think about, you know, what is really happening in the industry? Are there any tweaks that we need to be thinking about to encourage more of the cleaner combustion product to be available while we are still, while we are moving towards the zero emission targets in ACT? What this action is not doing and would not come back if this action comes back to the board at its next meeting is, this is not an amendment to ACF. This is not any a change to ACF. We would not be tackling directly the question of tow trucks and how they're categorized in ACF. That is a separate issue that's not related to this item. I think it's important for staff to keep talking to the industry and keep figuring out, you know, how things are playing out. But, you know, there's an intersection between these two rules where if the manufacturers were fully taking advantage of their flexibilities in ACT and bringing product to market, tow truck companies would have the opportunity to access the trucks they need, the combustion trucks they need. And so I just want maybe staff to take a beat and see if there's anything we can do to ensure that that happens. Separately, as Jack mentioned, you know, there are flexibilities within ACF that the companies need to be thinking about. Things, you know, questions around vehicle availability, whether or not there are vehicles that are available for their use case. You know, it's would be, I think it's important for staff to have that interaction with the industry so they know what those options are and are able to avail themselves of those options. In both of these rules, the board provided a lot of input and staff provided a lot of input. I mean, and staff worked a lot with stakeholders to build these flexibilities and to make sure they were usable. And I think that's kind of, we need to make sure that communication is happening and that the OEMs, as they think about their obligations under ACT, are making products available for their customers. These are their customers. They should want to serve their customers. And at the same time, as Advanced Clean Fleets moves forward, we want to make sure that there's good communication between fleets and staff about the options that are available to them and about the timing that's available to them, and make sure they're aware of their obligations. It's, you know, sometimes the information that gets passed from one company to another company or one dealer to another dealer may not always be the accurate information. So we want to make sure that, that there's accessible interaction between the industry and staff. Okay. Those are my thoughts, staff. Do you have any additional thoughts about how to tackle these problems and some of the kind of the bigger picture issues that the board members have raised?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Randolph. So first, would like to ask a question and just confirm you indicated to bring this back to the next meeting. I think we'd like some flexibility to on timing just to ensure that we have a chance to regroup and, you know, bring it back to a future meeting, understanding that, you know, we have APA to comply with. Just wanted to confirm that's okay. Not
yes.
necessarily next meeting.
Yes, a future meeting, you know, whenever staff feels like it's ready.
Thank you very much. And I'll just note, you did close the record. So in that intervening time, comments that do come in, we're not considering that as part of the record, and wanted to just reiterate that for those purposes. I know staff will be thinking about that. I also just wanted to note that there are thousands of credits available in ACT. So there isn't an issue of lack of credits for manufacturers. Certainly business decisions of each manufacturer is something that they individually can make. I am very concerned. I heard from Board Member De La Torre about prices in the EU potentially being much lower than in California, and some suggestions for how to handle that issue. So that's one accountability issue that we want to dig into a little bit more. Very much appreciate that. And also, to the extent that manufacturers are not taking advantage of pre-existing flexibilities, why? We're not totally clear on that. It was very important to hear that issue. What I thought I understood from MME and the Wheelers who testified today is that even if they are bringing credits forward and saying, great, we'll buy a combustion engine and we'll buy a credit under ACT, that's still not good enough for manufacturers. That's concerning. This isn't the manufacturers buying the credit. So I want to understand that issue a little better. I'll certainly be following up with the Wheelers. We talk very frequently, so I have their number, they have my number. But also the manufacturers who had indicated that that was a problem for them. You know, more generally want to kind of understand these issues. So engaging with the tow truck folks on what specific issues they're facing. At the end of the day, this regulation, the ACT regulation, and these particular amendments that we proposed don't directly impact those businesses from which we heard today. Nevertheless, there are related impacts that I think it's important, as the board has noted, that we need to get that information back. And then I think, you know, just the multitude of issues that we're hearing, we don't want to leave the impression that we have a problem in California related to getting zero emission trucks, or that somehow zero emission trucks aren't available, or we need to slow down any of our other rules. As I said, we're way ahead of schedule in terms of deploying zero emission trucks in California, 2 years ahead of schedule for what's required by the manufacturer mandate. And there are thousands of credits available. So that's not really the issue that we're facing here. There are business decisions that are at play, but I just wanted to reiterate that the rules are working, and in fact, we're seeing really great advancement. 1 in 6 new truck sales are zero emission. They might not be available in every category. We have flexibilities for that. They might not be available right now. We have flexibilities for that. There may not be infrastructure. We have flexibilities for that. So staff have kind of thought through all of these issues. So I don't want there to be a general concern about the rules more broadly. This constraint on combustion product as it relates to how the rules work together is something that we're continuing to work through. And that will be the specific issue that we'll be evaluating and bringing back to the board.
Okay, great. Do you feel like you had your questions answered, Board Member Gass?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think so. And so I think that maybe the question is more on process, because, you know, one, it's moving forward. How do we move forward here? And if these other issues are issues that would need to happen in other parts of the regs to fine-tune, does that mean we move forward today? Of course, I think to Board Member De La Torre's point, the flexibilities, or others have mentioned, flexibilities are there and not being used, then do we move forward today at all and look at our June meeting to actually answer those questions before we move them? Again, not trying to confuse the omnibus rules with ACF and ACT. So that's general, but thank you, staff. I think you answered most of my questions there. It's more about now what's the best process to move forward.
Okay, I think it sounds to me like the consensus is that on this item, we will have staff do some work and some fact gathering and some understanding of what's really happening, and then bring it back to us to a future meeting, not necessarily the next one. And at the same time, of course, continue the outreach that staff is doing with Fleet on the ACF rule as well, and continue those conversations with the tow truck companies and the upfitters. Do we need, Ellen, do we need to take a motion to do that, or is just, okay, we're fine with the consensus. Okay. So that is the last agenda item for the open part of the meeting. We will now move to open comment for those who wish to provide a comment regarding an item of interest within the jurisdiction of the board that is not on today's agenda. The clerk will call on those who have submitted a request to speak card, and if you are joining us remotely and wish to comment on items not on the agenda, please click the raise hand button or dial star 9 now. Board Clerk, will you please call those who've signed up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have we have two commenters who have turned in a request to speak card and wish to speak at this time. We will be showing a list of the next of the two commenters on the screen, so you can be prepared to come up to the podium. Public sign-up closure will be at 11:55. I apologize in advance if I mispronounce any names. First is Greg Herner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the board and staff. I had a different issue, but we resolved that earlier. So, but I do want to clarify, and I know this is not on the record, but I just clarify a couple of points. We are not talking about ACF in our concerns. Not saying ACF can't be an issue in the future, but we know there are flexibilities in that. Most of the 4,700 tow truck companies in California are not subject to the ACF. This is about getting chassis right now and fulfilling, you know, obligations to the Freeway Service Patrol, the work that they do there and stuff. This is, you know, and I understand it's complicated. I've been talking to staff since November at the first workshop. So this is, and I really appreciate their time and the open discussions that we've had about this issue. And I understand there's other dynamics going on, as Dr. Cliff has pointed out. But we stand ready to work with that. We also, in each of our three suggestions, didn't ask the board to designate us as emergency vehicles. We just asked to be provide relief. We know that it would take a statutory change to go back and designate us as emergency vehicles. So we didn't ask the board to take that step. We just are asking for towing and recovery vehicles for now, not can't count against the deficits that the manufacturer generates. And that's why we truly believe that we can do it under this ACT rule. If we just don't count those deficits against the manufacturers right now, we can get all the chassis we want. Miller has all the chassis we want, as long as they don't bring them to California. And, you know, it's just creating a really difficult dynamic for these employees and stuff. These are going to be the same employees that are assembling ZEV trucks in the future. But if we can't bridge that to get to that, they're going to lose their jobs now. And that's what we're trying to solve. Thank you.
Evan Edgar.
Thanks. Board members, I'm Evan Edgar, the Compost Cowboy. I missed you for the last couple months when you guys went dark. I have my comment letter on file with CARB. As you know, I represent organic waste haulers, and we produce our own fuel as carbon negative for 1383, and we provide essential public service every day. The LOA had a report out that California will not meet the 2030 climate goals. We know that. And with the ACF rules and with the California grid power mix, the greenhouse gases from the heavy-duty fleet may shrink about 45% by 2040. That's CARB numbers. So from 40 million metric tons down to 18, and that's a good play. But the ACF rules is what's chilling the RNG industry because we have no place to take our biomethane, and we have diesel trucks being purchased, renewable diesel surging, and we're not going to make our near zero NOx with all this diesel coming out. We have chilled the refuse industry from going carbon negative with the near zero NOx fleets, and it's indicative. I ran a model for the 16,000 refuse fleets in the industry We've been decarbonizing since 2000. 24 years we've been decarbonizing, and we've been making good headway. And we are today, with carbon negative fuel minus 100 average, we have reduced by 1 million metric tons. So what the HCF is doing is forcing us to be carbon positive. We are recarbonizing the refuse industry. Today I'm carbon negative, and by playing out the ACF, by 2042, we're going to be carbon positive using the California grid to power these battery electric vehicles. So in summary, you guys are forcing us to recarbonize our fleets to be positive instead of sending biomethane and sending biomethane to hard to decarbonize industries. As part of the ACF rule, he had a commitment to work with us on what to do with biomethane. We haven't heard a word. We didn't make biomethane for a tomato plant elsewhere. We made biomethane for our own fleet. So my question is, who killed the carbon negative fleet? Who killed the carbon negative fleet? Was it CARB? Was it environmental justice? Or was it the blood battery industry? I don't know.
Thank you. We have currently four commenters signed up to speak on Zoom. Our commenters are Claire Broom, Zan Dubin, Mark Carell, and Jamie Wright. Claire Broom, I've activated your microphone. Please unmute and you may begin.
Thank you very much. Chair Randolph, members of the board, I'm Claire Broom, representing 350 Bay Area. I wanted to start by thanking the board for directing the staff to spend additional time on the low carbon fuel standard regulations. This is an essential program for meeting California's climate goals. In addition to thanking you for the additional time, I do want to emphasize, as somebody who's done modeling professionally, models are approximations, they're not straitjackets. And I would particularly hope that the board can assure that consideration of models such as that developed by the Environmental Justice Advisory Committee and its consultants be considered and appropriate scrutiny on the validity of modeling that's been used. I hope it will emphasize getting to zero emission rather than spending, in my opinion, wasting $27 billion on combustion strategies such as biomethane and corn ethanol, which should be capped. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Our next commenter is Zan Dubin. I've activated your microphone. Please unmute and you may begin. Zan Dubin, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you. Good morning, board members. I'm Zan Dubin. You may have heard that Disneyland will convert the gas cars at its Autopia ride to electric. I led the campaign that brought this about with coverage from the LA Times. We applaud Disneyland, but the park has said it will electrify the cars by fall 2026. Complaints about Autopia's emissions are rife. When we filed a complaint with AQMD, an inspector told us that a Disneyland environmental engineer told her that he had received previous complaints. An Autopia employee told me he gets headaches. I read it's very common for Autopia managers to get employee transfer requests accompanied by doctor's notes and that employees get hazard pay. Headaches are one of the most common symptoms of poisoning from carbon monoxide, vehicles being its greatest outdoor source. Proximity and timing are key, and Autopia employees stand next to the cars for extended periods during their eight-hour shifts. Is CO causing the headaches and doctor's notes, or is it something else about the fuel and emissions from some 100 vehicles running bumper to bumper nearly nonstop? Even Prop 65 warns against lingering in outdoor gas stations. Mark Carell of Breathe SoCal informed Disneyland that the car's emissions are a threat not only to Autopia employees and its thousands of riders, but to people in surrounding communities. We filed a complaint about Autopia with CARB last year. Despite follow-up, CARB never responded. When will CARB measure the air quality at Autopia? If it won't, how will it ensure the public, Autopia employees and riders, and communities in the locale that it is safe to keep Autopia running for another 30 months? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next commenter is Mark Carell. I've activated your microphone. Please unmute and you may begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. I serve as president and CEO of the environmental health nonprofit Breathe Southern California. 2 years ago, my family and I visited Disneyland to experience a day at the happiest place on earth. Toward the end of our visit, we decided to go on the Autopia ride, which could charitably be called the smelliest ride on earth. I was stunned by the fact that a ride in Disneyland's Tomorrowland was using outmoded four-stroke internal combustion engines run on gasoline, which is not very futuristic. The Autopia ride opened in 1955 as a representation of the future of American highways, but the future as seen from 1955 is very different from the future as seen from 2024. We now know that gas-powered cars pollute the air and electric vehicles serve as sustainable alternatives. Waiting in line for 30 minutes before getting on the ride put my family and all the other patrons in the line of fire for the mini autos spewing smelly fumes from their four-stroke engines. It was enough to give us all a headache. Ironically, the entire Disneyland resort does not allow smoking or vaping, but its Autopia ride emits many of the same harmful chemicals that people inhale when smoking. After that visit, I wrote a letter to Disney's leadership, as Zan mentioned, recommending that Disneyland replace the Autopia gasoline-powered cars with electric cars. Making the vehicles electric would remove a large source of Disneyland's dangerous carbon and criteria pollutant emissions inhaled directly by guests and Disney employees. It would also reduce pollution-related health risks for the children who form a significant portion of riders, as well as those living in nearby communities such as Anaheim, Santa Ana, Orange, and more. I was pleased when Disneyland recently announced it would convert Autopia to an all-electric ride. Unfortunately, it's not happening soon enough. I urge the board to direct staff to look into this matter and urge Disney to upgrade sooner so that we can get healthier air from Disneyland. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next commenter is Jamie Wright. I've activated your microphone. Please unmute and begin.
Yes. So we're urging the board to adopt the Miller Industries Amendment. If we are unable to pass this amendment today, many of the companies who spoke today that actually manufacture for the tow companies in California will be out of business. So to my understanding, they do not have a zero emission chassis that is available to operate the body of a tow truck. So if this amendment is not passed, we will not have new tow trucks available for sale in California. And I understand there's a lot of other things that go into this, but we are just asking you guys to adopt the Miller Industries amendment so that we are able to purchase new tow trucks. And it won't stop the sale in California of the new tow trucks, which if you guys are able to pass this amendment, we will be able to do that. Otherwise, if this is not passed, all of those companies go out of business. So that's just what we're asking. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the Zoom commenters.
All right. Thank you very much. The board will now adjourn into closed session. The board has re-adjourned to the open meeting from closed session. No reportable action was taken in closed session. This meeting of the California Air Resources Board is now adjourned.